Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 20th, 2018. Some warring parties at the talks in Khartoum say South Sudan's vice presidents should have equal power.
This power should be shared by the consultation with the BPs in the state of first vice president will take it as the powers for himself.
And South Sudan's finance minister defends allotting 40% to military spending in the new fiscal year budget.
Because of operations, because the country is large, and particularly the greater Upper Nile, everything taken to troops by air, and air is very expensive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Mediators have adjourned South Sudan's peace talks for 5 days to allow mediators and the warring parties to break for the Muslim holiday Eid al-Adha. Sudan's foreign minister told reporters in Khartoum last night that a date will be set to sign the deal after the holiday. But some officials say a few issues, including the role of the first vice president, remain unresolved. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Speaking in Arabic to reporters, minutes after meeting the parties last night, Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dirdiri Mohammed Ahmed said mediators distributed a draft revitalized 2015 peace deal to the warring parties a few days ago and encouraged them to submit their views. He said some of the parties claim they did not have enough time to review the entire document, but said their views can be incorporated into the final draft of the revitalized peace agreement. Ahmed added that some parties have already submitted their views and much of their observations have been made public already. Ahmed says he expects the warring parties to use the break to read every page of the document and prepare to sign it soon after the talk resumes. He says once a draft revitalized peace deal is signed by all the parties, the mediators will immediately organize a 3-day workshop among all the warring parties. Ahmed says the workshop will focus on the mechanism of how the transitional security arrangement can be implemented for all forces in South Sudan. He says mediators also expect representatives of Sudan, Uganda, African Union, and the United Nations to be present during the workshop. One of the most contentious issues is Article 4, which deals with a number of states and their boundaries. The power-sharing and governance agreement recently signed by the parties bracketed the states' issue to be dealt with by an independent boundaries commission. If the commission could not resolve the number of states and their boundaries, it would be settled by a referendum. While some members of the opposition say organizing a referendum within a pre-transitional period is not viable, the government insists that all parties already agreed it will be dealt with by the commission or a referendum and cannot be reopened for discussion. Another contentious issue has been the power-sharing distribution between the first vice president and the four vice presidents. While some delegates at the talks want the first vice president to be in charge of supervising the implementation of the peace agreement during the transitional period, others say this should be a responsibility shared by all five vice presidents. Hussein Abdulbaghi of the South Sudan Patriotic Movement, which is affiliated with the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says the power among the vice presidents should be shared equally.
This power should be shared by the consultation with the BPs in the state of first vice president will take it as the powers for himself because the program, because peace is for all.
But Manawa Peter Gatkwath from the SPLM-IO argues that the powers given to first vice president empower him to fully implement the peace agreement. He says rather than demanding that the powers of the first vice president be shared, some of the powers entrusted to President Kiir should be delegated to opposition vice presidents.
There is a lot of power still with the president. They're supposed to look after it because that's what brings us Sudan to fight among them, to fight because president have a lot of power because of the constitution of 2011, give the president a lot of power to do everything in South Sudan. We say this is cannot help the people of South Sudan.
Sudanese Foreign Minister Ahmed says he expects the talk to resume on August 25th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
South Sudanese lawmakers today passed a new fiscal year budget for the 2018-2019 year in Juba. The 81 billion South Sudanese pound budget, which is equivalent to 560 million U.S. dollars, doubles the amount of the previous fiscal year budget. South Sudan's finance minister says the government will be funded by the country's resources accrued locally. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Finance Minister Salvatore Garang says the two biggest portions of the budget are security or military spending and paying government salaries. Garang says 40% of the Kiir administration budget will be spent on salaries, while 25% will be spent on service delivery. He defends the huge allocation designation for military spending.
Because of operations, because the country is large, and particularly the greater Upper Nile. Everything taken to troops by air, and air is very expensive.
Other sectors such as health care, education and infrastructure received far smaller allocations in the new budget. Both general and tertiary or university-level education received only 10% of budget allocation. A paltry 3.7% of the federal budget was allocated to physical infrastructure, while healthy received only 2.5%. Garang told the South Sudan in Focus that the government intends to fund the federal budget with the local resources.
The local resources, oil is having the biggest part. And then also the tax, non-oil revenues, that is from customs, from taxation, from migration, and non-tax revenue being collected on behalf of the Minister of Finance by the institutions, like commerce, like Bureau of Standards, justice on contracts, and agricultural products.
But lawmakers, including the Speaker Anthony Lino Makana, criticized the executive for repeatedly failing to account before Parliament for money approved in the annual budgets.
The ministers undermining this house, they are nowhere to be seen, and they lobby MPs, and these MPs who are being lobbied, I'm really sorry for you, because you are not supposed to talk about on behalf of the ministers. They are supposed to bring their reports here. None of them brought their reports. And this is a very serious issue, and the Haugas House is going to write a report to the head of the executive, which is the president, about it. Because budget is a very important issue, and we are serious. And they are the very one who are saying that we are rubber stamp. And they don't show up here for the budget.
Other lawmakers challenged Parliament for not summoning the executive for questioning in order to hold them accountable. Deng Shelkur, chairperson of the Legislative Committee in the National Assembly, called on fellow lawmakers to execute their roles as stewards of the federal budget and for ministers to carry out their duties to oversee their budgets this time around.
Establishment the Office of the Control of Budget to solve the perennial problem of budget indiscipline.
Gabriel Rorich, a lawmaker representing former Western Lakes State in the National Legislative Assembly, is also the chief whip for other opposition political parties in the parliament.
We have been here for many years now. I have never seen a report, what we call quarterly report, from a minister or from a ministry, say that when the budget comes, it is given according to this report. But we are doing this continuously like that without asking the executive. So I'm appealing that let the ministers, after this budget, come with their quarterly report, say that we know, we monitor the activities which they are doing in their ministries.
Last year's budget was 46 billion South Sudanese pounds. Minister Garang says this year's budget is focused on stabilizing security across South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Tear gas and live bullets have rocked Kampala and surrounding areas as Ugandan police and the army battle to contain rioters protesting the detention of legislator Robert Kyagulanyi in a military facility. He's among five legislators and 30 others who were arrested for reportedly obstructing President Museveni's convoy as he returned from a campaign rally. As Catherine Namby reports from Kampala, protesters today demanded that Kia Gulani be freed unconditionally.
Business came to halt in parts of Kampala this afternoon as police and other security forces fought to curb sporadic protests against the detention and alleged torture of legislator Robert Kyagulanyi and his colleagues. Youths in various parts of the city blocked roads and set tires alight. Police responded with gunfire and tear gas. Anti-riot police intercepted demonstrators who were moving from Constitutional Square in the city centre towards the Makindye barracks, where Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, is being held. Stella Nyanzi, a Makerere University researcher, was one of those marchers. She took refuge in another legislator's office.
So we came because Bobi Wine is incarcerated in Makindye. Makindye is in a military barracks. We came to show solidarity and say that civilians must not be, one, detained in military barracks. Bobi Wine needs medication.
The police department brought in reinforcements with trucks ferrying field force police personnel seen around the city. Emilian Kaima is the Uganda police spokesperson. He says the riots are a breach of Uganda's public order management law.
The rioters interfered with the traffic flow, burnt tires on the roads, destroying the road immensely, and occasioned harm on innocent citizens. These acts are criminal, unlawful, and unnecessary.
Kyagulanyi, a popular musician, and three other lawmakers and many supporters were arrested a week ago when protests broke out during campaigning for a by-election in Arua municipality. The military says it found military weapons in Chagulanyi's car and says that means he can be tried by a military court. His lawyer and wife say he has been so badly beaten in detention that he can barely walk or speak. He has not been seen in public. More than 30 protesters have been arrested today and are being held at Central Police Station. On social media, there are reports of some being injured, including journalists being attacked by security forces, but they cannot be confirmed. But Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has dismissed as fake reports indicating that Kyagulanyi is gravely ill. In a letter to his social media audience, President Museveni said the musician turned politician is suffering the consequence of his poor discipline. Lawyer Malema Bidizi has filed a high court petition challenging the government's plan to try Kyagulanyi in an army court.
Then when you got into the EPDF Act, the punishment for unlawful possession of a firearm is death. The maximum is death. Yet under the Firearms Act, the maximum sentence is 7 years. So you see there is a clear plan to incriminate each and every person who is going to oppose Museveni. And moreover, court martial is not a court. It's a tribunal appointed by him for 3 years contract, which is renewable, meaning that those members, actually, they are only acting on his command. And that would be okay if you are putting there the EPDF officers, because EPDF officers must pay allegiance to the president.
Civil society organizations have called for the prosecution of security personnel behind the alleged torture of the five legislators and 30 other people who were arrested last week. Museveni, who has led Uganda more than 30 decades, has long been accused of repressing his opponents and committing human rights abuses. He denies those allegations. The United Kingdom Foreign and Commonwealth Office and the U.S. Embassy have warned their nationals of heightened political tensions in Uganda following the arrest of the lawmakers. This is Catherine Namby for VOA News in Kampala.
South Sudanese living in the Ugandan capital say they are worried about the looming instability in Uganda. Malwal Kir is a South Sudanese civil society activist who fled from Juba in July of last year. Kir says he worries about the political unrest in neighboring Uganda.
What I saw in town is that the people of Uganda were trying to rise up and wanted to organize. protest regarding the arrest of MP Chagulanyi, Robert Chagulanyi, which is also known as Bobi Wine. He's an Afrobeat musician. So he has been arrested, and he was brought to Kampala at Machinde Court, which is a military court. So there has been a reaction from the citizens that if he has committed something that is wrong, he's supposed to be tried in a civil court, not in a military court, because he's not a military personnel. And the citizen tried to organize the demonstration today, but then the police came to disperse the population with the tear gas, and you know, the town was kind of very, very chaotic and turbulent at the same time.
There is a huge number of South Sudanese families living in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. With the reports of unrest in the city, it appears like the situation is very worrying to many families who fled violence in South Sudan. What are some of the concerns of the families you've spoken to today?
The situation indeed is very worrying for South Sudanese, because most of the South Sudanese who are here, some of them are students that are coming for studies. Some of them who are urban refugees, like you've said, are coming here for safety. But when they see the situation getting the way it is now, so it's really very worrying, because this is the only hope that they have been having, to wait for peace and stability in South Sudan. What they were hoping is that the situation get calm and they continue with the normal businesses.
What are the Ugandan authorities saying?
The Ugandan authorities are saying that they are trying to calm the population, because there have been photos of Bobi Wine, for example, in media that he has been tortured and stuff like that. And that is what actually frustrates the citizens, to organize that kind of a protest. But the authorities are saying that some of these things is just a media portraying that he has been tortured. So they've been trying to deny it, but they are insisting that it would be tried in the court. They have not yet changed the fact that he would be tried in the military court. But again, some of the concerns from the citizen side is that he needs some medical attention. President Museveni made a statement. He said he sent UPDF doctors to check on him, and he says that the doctors told him that Bobi Wine is okay, his health condition is fine. But the citizens are not convinced, so they wanted to know whereabouts of Bobi Wine. So the officials are dispersing the protesters, and they are telling the public that Bobi Wine is okay, is not tortured, is fine in wherever he is.
You said a lot of South Sudanese are worried. What are they telling you about their next course of action?
That is a very difficult question to answer, but I think they, for now, they don't have a second alternative thinking of where they should go, because they only have two options. One is whether or not the peace agreement that is working on now, if it is really an agreement that will bring sustainable peace into our own country. So I think the only hope for most of the South Sudanese has always been a need for peace in the country, for them to go back home.
What is the South Sudanese embassy in Kampala telling its nationals?
I have not seen any statement so far from the South Sudanese embassy, and I have not yet seen any statement as well from the office of the Prime Minister, which protects the refugees, both urban and those who are in the settlements.
That is Malawal Kir, Executive Director of the African Youth Network. That's a South Sudanese civil society group based in Uganda. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Kampala earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Constitutional Court in Zimbabwe takes up alleged electoral voter fraud. We'll have more on that after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what type of student were you in school?
I was calm. I was quiet. I hardly talk much. I focus more on academic work, but I was noted for always playing. I play a lot when I was a child.
An outgoing student, quiet. I used to speak a lot. I used to love adventure.
Well, I was the talkative one. I always talk And yes, I'm this kind of public speaking people, like this kind of students who just speak out and all this stuff. So yeah, I was a talkative student.
Actually, when I was in the school, I was one of the type of the school student that I'm very stubborn. But I want to be always the first in the class. My voice must be listened, and I want to be known, famous by everybody in the school.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. This Wednesday, Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court will begin hearing one of the country's biggest cases with major implications for the political future of the country. The main opposition has alleged electoral fraud in the July 30th elections when the ruling ZANU-PF party won the presidency and two-thirds of the parliament's seats. Reporter Kudzai Zvinovashi has more details.
Nelson Chamisa heads the opposition MDC alliance that is contesting the election results. On the eve of what promises to be a bruising and iconic battle, he urged President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who official results say won a fresh term, to concede defeat instead.
Mr. Mnangagwa was defeated in this election, and as I indicate, we are urging him to accept that defeat and to be honorable enough, patriotic enough, and humble enough, revolutionary enough to accept the will of the people.
The country hangs in limbo while awaiting the court's ruling. Chamisa says he is aware of the case's impact on the populace, but calls it a necessary evil.
I fully understand your anxieties as a nation around the upcoming court case that we are challenging after the subversion of the will of the people. I would like to guarantee you that we have a very strong case, and we are going to overturn this electoral fraud. Consistent with what we promised you, we are going to defend your vote, our vote, the people's vote. What is clear is that what is on trial is not Nelson Chamisa or the MDC alliance. What is on trial is democracy.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has adjusted Mnangagwa's election results downward slightly, citing some irregularities. But it insists the mistakes do not warrant an election rerun, with the president still winning just over 50% of the ballots. Chamisa says they will also challenge the parliamentary results, which currently would give ZANU-PF a big enough majority to change the constitution.
We also want to debunk the myth that Mnangagwa and his party got the two-thirds majority. They did not. We are challenging most of those results, so they do not have a two-thirds. They know that they engineered and rigged the elections in certain constituencies in a brazen fashion.
On the eve of the elections, Chamisa pondered a boycott, claiming the playing field was not level. Now his fate is with the courts, and critics have often questioned their independence. Asked if he would accept an adverse ruling, he said his party would make a forensic assessment prior to taking a stance. Meanwhile, Mnangagwa and his camp say they believe Chamisa's case has no fit to stand on. The court case has attracted a lot of attention locally and internationally. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashi from Harare.
A Sudanese-born British man briefly appeared in court today for allegedly driving his car into a group of bicyclists before crashing into a security barrier just outside Parliament in London. Police are treating the case as terrorism. Three people were injured in what the prosecutor calls a deliberate, calculated attack, saying the driver accelerated to 80 kilometers per hour. 29-year-old Saleh Khatter was arrested at the scene and faces two charges of attempted murder. In court, Khatter spoke only to confirm his name, date of birth, nationality, and address. Police have said he has not been cooperating with the investigation of the incident that took place on August 14th. He did not enter a plea. His next court appearance is scheduled for August 31st. Today is World Humanitarian Day. While commemorating the day in Juba today, a top United Nations official called for an end to the attacks in South Sudan against civilians and humanitarian aid workers. He also urged the country's leaders to restore peace across the country. Dima Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
At today's event in Juba, aid workers gathered to pay tribute to colleagues who have died in the line of duty while working in South Sudan. Many people carried placards reading, "Not a target," meaning civilians, including aid workers who have been targeted by warring parties in South Sudan in the past. Allen Naudejo, the UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says there has been an uptick in the number of attacks against aid workers and their property in the past year. He cites an incident last month in Maban in which locals attacked aid agency's officers and burned property, including vehicles.
About 400 humanitarian workers had to retreat from Maban after a demonstration turned extremely violent. Vehicles were burnt, humanitarian warehouses were looted, and workers were threatened. In the first 6 months of 2018, 12 aid workers lost their lives. 68 humanitarian workers were detained, and there were 22 cases of looting and 198 incidents recording violence against humanitarian workers, either themselves or their assets.
Naudejo calls those numbers unacceptable and says that kind of violence against aid workers and other civilians must stop immediately. Naudejo knows that thousands of international and local aid workers risk their lives every day to provide life-saving assistance to conflict-affected South Sudanese.
As we commemorate World Humanitarian Day for 2018, we stand in remembrance and to honor those aid workers who lost their life in providing humanitarian assistance over the past year. And we also pay tribute to those who continue each day to bring much-needed aid and protection to millions still in need of humanitarian assistance across South Sudan.
Last week, South Sudan was ranked the worst place to be an aid worker for the past 3 years in a row. Angelina Bianyima, executive director of National NGO Progress Restoration, says that is not good news for South Sudan.
We said enough is enough. Let this be a day to affirm each other fundamental humanity and respect for human life. We need to change the mindset of people who are used to killing people, aid workers. We need to make sure aid workers are not a target. We are just doing our work to help the community. People should not look at us like we are spying anyway.
The South Sudan government says it is doing its best to protect aid workers and their property, but the violence continued this year. Speaking at the same event, Santino Ball, Deputy Director for the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or RRC, says once the revitalized peace deal is signed, he hopes aid workers in South Sudan will see an improved environment for their work across the country.
There are incidences that happen when they are not expected to happen. One example is the incident of Maban, when young people went on rampage and rolled into humanitarian property and destroyed them in a very short time. Government has not fallen short of making efforts, and all those activities have been brought to control, and accountability has been taken on, and those who perpetrated the acts have now been taken to jail and are undergoing a system of justice in the country.
Ball says he regrets the loss of life of aid workers in South Sudan, whose services would have saved millions of vulnerable people. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Pio by Emi Iori.
Chipare
We've been listening to Emmy Yore with the song Capillo. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could join us today. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can find us at SouthSudan@voanews.com or contact us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.